Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio, and today is Friday, and it's November the 25th, 2022. Dr. Tim's away today, so today is a pre-recorded show of The Way of Mastery, Lesson 2. We'll be back in an hour with Michael and myself alive, and we'll see you then. Hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Friday, February 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17, almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can print off the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. And you can also download from the App Store of your choice, Google Play or Apple App Store, a complete, safe, private, free app, been the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And listening to those shows, sometimes repeatedly, is a great way to formulate a tutorial for yourself, to learn how to use these tools and to build your skills in a variety of different situations that might relate to finances, emotions, relationships, physical aches and pains, etc. We hope people do that soon and often because many times that leads to comments and questions or testimonials, and if you have any of that that you'd like to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581. And once you've called that number, press 1. It'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. And as I say in most of the shows, we appreciate when people do that because It makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And I say the word intention rather than goal because in this work we understand that whenever we set a goal for something that we don't achieve, it continues to run in our system. So we learn to manage our goals differently, and we learn to acknowledge and talk about plans and intentions that stay in that category of thought where I haven't elevated it to the level of behavior. I haven't told my mind, show me what behaviors I need to do to make this happen. And our intention with this work is to be of service. It's okay if we're not, it's okay if we are, but our intention is to be of service, and so we keep trying to modify what we're doing, and we appreciate any feedback in one direction or another that lets us know if we're living into that intention. The other thing we're doing this year is we're working with the Way of Mastery, and we're in the second lesson of the Way of Mastery, maybe about halfway through it. And one of the things that came up on Tuesday in the support group was we were listening to a Guy Finley talk, one of his presentations, where he talked extensively about the paradox, the parable, the koan, a statement which seems to contradict itself. You know, in order to live, in order to save your life, you've got to die, etc. These, from the Western, what we call the Western scriptures, there are a number of confounding, conflicting statements that if they happened in the Eastern tradition, they would be called a koan. And a koan is a statement that catches the conscious logical mind in a loop. A koan might be do nothing and nothing is left undone. Another koan is no ignorance, no end to ignorance. So I mention this as a sidebar because where we left off yesterday in the second lesson of Way of Mastery is right before the next heading. And these headings were created, and they weren't actually spoken in the original download. But the heading for this next section is probably going to sound like a contradictory statement or a koan to the Western mind. Mastery arises from innocence. Mastery arises from innocence. And this ties into what we've been told already. This is about noticing when we take ourselves seriously and dropping that. Choosing to release our attachment to being serious, to getting it right, to knowing the answers, and to do that with childlike innocence and play and joy. So the heading of this chapter, or this segment of this chapter or lesson, is Mastery Arises from Innocence. In these lessons, we will create a system or a pathway upon which you can walk. You don't have to. No one can force you. Over and over in these lessons, we're reminded we have the choice of what we create moment to moment. So it's not by coincidence that it says we will create a system or a pathway upon which you can walk. And if you choose to do that, you will be choosing to deliberately cultivate the quality of awareness and consciousness that is necessary to stabilize that awareness so that you can bring it to each and every moment of your experience. in order to stabilize my conscious awareness, in order to have the ability to choose consciously what is the focus of my attention moment to moment, I have to cultivate, deliberately cultivate, a quality of awareness that is not there now, a quality of awareness I was not trained into in my life. But these lessons, these suggested exercises, will, if they're done, if you choose to do them, they will create a system or a pathway. And then if you choose to deliberately focus on applying them, it will help you cultivate the quality of awareness that is necessary to stabilize your awareness so you can bring conscious focus to your awareness in each moment. And that's how you move, that's how you deepen, that's how you experience the way of the heart. Imagine then being able to experience whatever arises and maintaining a sense of spaciousness, innocence, and ease. That same spaciousness, innocence, and ease that you've only had in fleeting moments of enlightenment or connection or deep awareness. For instance, know you the experience when things are going well and you are singing a happy tune and life seems to be moving ahead? Do you know that experience? Imagine that same quality of trust, faith, certainty of purpose, even when the buildings are crumbling around you and the bank account has gone dry. Just imagine being able to look at those events with the same sense of innocence and wonder with which you would look at the eyes of your beloved. Such a quality of awareness is perfect mastery. Within it are discovered perfect peace, perfect freedom, perfect joy, and uninterrupted communion with all of creation. And if you would well receive it, that quality of feeling intimately one with all of creation, which is what you have been seeking as a soul, since first the identification with creation called ego began. So it's interesting here. If you would well receive it, it's always there. It's always being offered. It's being given endlessly. It's part of your existence. It's part of your connection to creation. The perfect peace, the perfect freedom, the perfect joy, and the uninterrupted awareness of your communion with all of creation. To be aware of it, all you need to do is receive it. You have to be willing to receive it. Why do we need to be willing to receive it? Because once we created the dream of separation, the belief and the identification with egoic thoughts, conflict and experience of separation were born in that moment. And everything you've ever attempted to do since then has been an attempt to overcome that dream of separation, that experience of being separate and separated from reality, life, your creator, etc. And to try to gain back what you felt you'd lost. The thing is, it's that the ways you've tried to do that do not work. Because you're using the same mechanism of thought, the same identification as being in the driver's seat and the one who must be and do it all, that conscious logical thought, that egoic intellectual processing, that's what created the dream of separation, and you're using that to try and end the dream of separation. It can't ever work. The world of conflict, fear, guilt, and unworthiness, and the world of the kingdom lie side by side within your own mind. The eye of the needle that one must pass through is the recultivation of the innocence of a child. It is for this reason that I often taught, become again as a little child to enter the kingdom. The cultivation of the way of the heart. Please pay attention to how many times you hear the word cultivation in just these first two lessons. Cultivating. What does that mean? What does that word mean to you? What is it to cultivate something? It's not that you drop a seed on the ground and walk away. There's preparation of the soil. There's fertilizing the soil. There's tilling the soil to soften it. There's choosing the seeds carefully. There's planting them individually sometimes at just the right depth. There's adding moisture to the soil. There's making certain that there's enough light, sunlight, nutrient light hitting the soil to warm it to just the right temperature so that the seed germinates and sprouts. Cultivating, the cultivation of the way of the heart is that pathway whereby you deliberately and consciously choose to become again as an innocent child. Imagine choosing the perspective moment to moment in your life that you are a child at play in a kingdom. Choosing the innocence, the playfulness, the willingness to allow, accept, embrace all things. Just as you were in the beginning before you ever created and then incarnated into this dimension of experience that seems to be permeated by a sense of conflict and separation before you ever had a body, before you ever incarnated into physical form, you had this absolute wonder and awe and innocence and awareness. So this chapter goes on, this lesson goes on to let us know that you are a creator of your experience, and what you decree is. I would ask you now to begin to put into practice put it into the practice in your awareness that what you decree is. So whenever you happen to be someplace, whenever, wherever it comes to your mind, just for a moment, truly become aware of where you are. Where are you? Are you not having an experience of being within a body on a little blue globe spinning through space? Doesn't it seem to you that you are in the middle of a room or walking in a forest preserve or sitting in a chair in a waiting room for a professional office? How did that happen? Are you not within an environment in which there are certain weather patterns going on around you? Perhaps there are sounds that are coming into your ears? Just for a moment, whenever it comes to your mind, work at being truly aware of where you are in that moment. Can you feel the weight of your body as you stand upon your feet or sit in the chair or lie on the bed? Do you notice a tension in your neck? Is your mind racing? Are there thoughts bouncing around in there? Can you begin to bring awareness to exactly what is in this moment? From a place within you of complete innocence, and complete allowance and acceptance. You have a saying in your world, quote, it is what it is. That is the beginning of wisdom. You will discover that what is what you have chosen to make of it. Be therefore where you are in each moment and deliberately decide, to accept wholly that you are experiencing what you have decreed in this moment, and it has no cause whatsoever except your choice to experience it. And this is something you're going to have to cultivate because it's the opposite of what you've been trained to believe. If you were raised in a Western culture, you were trained to focus on outside events and to attribute any internal experience you have to those outside events. Rest assured that whatever the mind may try to say to you, and your mind will throw up all kinds of refutations of this observation, try to demonstrate to you what has been programmed into it for decades. She made me angry. He hurt my feelings. That is tragic. That is pleasant. That is overwhelming. That is marvelous. The outside event is what causes my upset. So, rest assured that whatever refutation your mind might serve up for you, if you did not wholly, completely want to be right where you are in any moment, you would not be there. If you are in a body in the field of space and time, rest assured you desired it. You chose it and it is here. And again, this isn't necessarily your conscious logical mind. This is referring to the higher self, the spark of life, spark of the divine mind that chose to be here. Begin here. There's no need to judge it, no need to ask it to be different. Just truly be aware of what is. If you're feeling your body sitting in a chair, allow this thought to come into the mind. Quote, I have literally created this experience. Something within me is so grand, so powerful, so vast, so beyond anything that scientists have ever come up with, that I have literally crystallized into the field of experience an awareness of being a body in space and time. This experience has come forth from the field of my consciousness. This is the gift to me of the Creator. And the Creator asks only that I learn how I am creating as the Creator creates. I have said many times that creation looks upon you and says, this is my only creation and it is good. It is just as it should be. For the Creator marvels at what you are, knowing perfectly well that what you are emerged from the Creator's holy mind. So please, likewise, look upon your creations and marvel. How is it that you could abide in this time on this planet? How could it be that you can place yourself behind the wheel of an automobile and actually get from point A to point B? That is a mystery and a marvel, and no one knows how it is done. Yet it is done, time and time again. The reason it is done is that all power has been given unto you. And what you decree is, a man or a woman shall decree a thing, and it shall be so. You have decreed this moment. Please own it. Be aware of what you have done. Cultivate the awareness. of your power to create your experience each and every moment. For by owning it right now, you can begin to sense the incredible and awesome power that flows through you and the mind, the spark of creative mind that you are in each moment. That is the power to create. Begin by choosing now to cultivate the practice in this manner. Set the intention so that in each hour of your day for 3 to 5 minutes, you practice by bringing this quality of awareness to exactly whatever you are experiencing, whenever that thought arises to do the practice. Please, watch the chance, watch the Western mind go into rigidity and decide to get out a calendar and block out every 15 minutes and say, here's a 3-minute block here and a 5-minute block there, and I'm going to set my alarm. Please notice the urge to try and control or get it right and judge yourself when you do it one way or another. This is about doing it when the thought comes to your mind. This is about cultivating a sense of awareness that arises naturally as you live your life day to day. So when the thought arises to do so, you do the practice then. Where does that thought come from? Well, what we're suggesting is it shouldn't come from your smartphone. Where does it come from? Imagine that you're going through the day and you've been hustling and bustling about. You've gone to your office or your work. You've talked to friends. You've bought groceries. You've done all of these things. And then suddenly, in the midst of all of that, the thought appears, oh, I want to focus on being aware that I am literally the creator of what I experience. When it arises in such a fashion, it will be because you have cultivated, you have initiated the desire. You have spent some of your mind energy focusing on this practice and this pathway. And if that arises in the middle of your day, do you think it happened by accident? No. The thought is penetrating your conscious awareness from the depth of your mind that rests right next to the mind of the Creator. Therefore, the power to generate that very thought is the effect of the Creator's will entering into your field of being, penetrating the veils of distraction, and shining forth as the thought, that's right, 5 minutes every hour. Can you feel the awesomeness of that? For truly, in truth, as always, you are linked to the mind of the Creator. And the Creator knows how to bring you back to complete freedom, perfect peace, and mastery of this entire realm. You do not know how to do that. The Creator knows how to do that. The One Mind, the Christ Mind, the Holy Spirit, the Great Comforter, endless names that we create for this process, for this energy, for this consciousness. Those who truly love creation and would truly awaken will feel something compelling them to master this simple practice for 5 minutes each hour. They will learn to delight in and look forward to it. Pretty soon, those 5 minutes will stretch into 6, then 10, then 15, and 50, until finally, there is established in their awareness the unchanging realization that everything arises. Everything that arises is something they have decreed, and so it is. 5 minutes every hour is not much to ask. For 5 minutes every hour, be as you are created to be. Allow yourself to be as you are created to be. Watch the tendency in the Western mind to should on yourself about this. There is no should about this. There is no great accolade to be won if you manage to get through an entire day where 5 minutes in every hour you spend doing this. There is no shame to be had if you wake up 3 days from now and realize you haven't done it once. That's the ego, either creating the acclaim or the shame. This is about the cultivation of awareness. Step us back to where we began today with the heading that says, mastery arrives from innocence. Mastery does not arrive from putting your nose to the grindstone and making sure that you set enough alarms on your iPad and your smart devices and the clocks around your house, and you pay your assistant to remind you to do this so that you never forget to do that five-minute exercise in each hour. That's not what mastery arises from. Mastery arises from cultivating the innocence, cultivating a presence of awareness, so that when the thought arises, oh, I should spend a few minutes tuning into the realization that I have chosen to be here, that I am creating this experience. And when I do that, I will feel the connection to the one mind, to the flow of creation. 5 minutes every hour, be as you are created to be. A creator decreeing that which brings forth experience. Catch it the next time you say, well, I'm really here because I have to be. I'm really just doing this because it's what I have to do. Catch that and see its false nature. See it as a thought of the egoic mind. Rest in the truth. I've chosen to be here. I'm choosing how I experience it. I can choose again if I don't like the product of my choices. Take the words ought, should, must, and have to, write them on a piece of paper, and look at them. And then light a match and burn the paper. Let it dissolve to dust. This is a symbol of allowing the energy you've given these words to become again as the dust or the ash of the ground. Clear from your consciousness all identification with such words, for all of them are denials of reality. So this is where the Western mind is just going to start flip-flopping and tying itself in knots. 5 minutes every hour? Oh, my God, how am I going to do that? Well, maybe there's a special app I can buy. Maybe I can pay somebody to follow me around and poke me with a sharp stick for 5 minutes every hour. That's the opposite of what is being suggested. Even if I were to do that, it would not put me on the path which we are calling the way of the heart. So notice what your mind is doing when you hear a suggestion like, make the commitment to spend 5 minutes every hour realizing that you are creating your own experience. Notice what the Western mind does, and notice how quickly, how clearly this book comes out and tells us, take the words ought, should, must, and have to, and write them on a piece of paper, look at them, notice what comes up in you about them, and then burn it. Burn the piece of paper. Let it turn to dust. Use this as a symbol of allowing the energy that you have given to these words about how you need to and you should and you must and you have to, allow that energy to dissipate from your consciousness. Those energies are not on the pathway that we're calling the way of the heart. Clear from your consciousness any identification with such words. Must, have to, need to, should, ought to. They are denials of the actuality of life. Many times I've shared with you, you need do nothing. listen to these words and take them into yourself as though they are your own voice, because they are. You need do nothing. Well, what does that mean? I thought I was just told that in order to be on this pathway, in order to reconnect to my source, in order to stay in alignment with my true nature, I need to stop every 5 minutes and reconnect my awareness to the process of how I'm creating my experience of life and how I've chosen. I thought I needed to do that. That's the ego. Judging, comparing, criticizing, weighing, preparing you to either exalt yourself for such a fabulous job or berate yourself for failing at it. You need do nothing. You do not have to survive. Whoever told you that you had to survive? You do not have to make everybody happy. Whoever told you that you had to? Whoever told you that you could make anyone happy? That's one of the biggest lies you've ever been told. You do not have to abide as a body in time and space. Whoever told you that you had to? You do not have to pay your bills. Who told you that? There are people every day on this planet who refuse to pay their bills, who walk away from their job, who file bankruptcy. And yeah, it's going to create a set of ripples of energy and effects that can be experienced one way or another according to your choice if you choose that. But the fact of the matter is you don't have to. You literally need do nothing. This is quite different than wanting or choosing to do something. You do not need to love your parents. You do not need to honor your father and your mother. You do not need to worship your creator, me, or anybody else. You do not need to love yourself. You literally need do nothing. For need is an expression of the perception that there is something you lack. Because you are one with all of creation, there is never a moment when you lack anything at all. We all know the mental mindset, the cultural conditioning, the family conditioning of how we aren't good enough until we do this or that, and we aren't lovable unless we have this or that. And in truth, we literally need do nothing. Can you allow the thought to emerge in your mind when you arise in the morning? I need do nothing today. I don't even have to get out of this bed. I don't have to go into an office. I don't need to fulfill that order. I don't need to say good morning to my mate. I literally need do nothing. For please, just observe, how can there be the power of freedom to choose and to create when you're being governed by the belief of the world that you must be in a certain way? The belief that you need to be acceptable to others, that you need to conform and fit in, that you need to dress the way others dress, that you need to be committed to surviving an extra day upon this plane. If those needs were true, there could be no freedom. There can be no freedom wherever there is need. Here we are, about to set up practicing for the first two axioms. These are the first two axioms of the Way of the Heart. These are to be built on, to be remembered, to be cultivated, there's that word again, worked with, massaged, focused on, observed, playfully, with childlike innocence, engaged with this practice. I am created as the Creator created me to be. I am free. And nothing sources my experience but me in each moment. Nothing has an effect on me whatsoever except for that which I choose to allow to affect me. I need do nothing. It's recommended that we take a breath here. You don't need to, but it's recommended that you take a deep breath, hold it at the top, and slowly exhale. The lesson goes on to say, in the beginning, we would suggest that you practice this second axiom in the morning and in the evening as you are arising and as you are retiring. At least twice in each of your days, we would ask you to cultivate for 5 minutes the repetition of this thought so that you feel it in your bones. I need do nothing. Now, please watch what arises within you as we read that paragraph again. Here is a suggestion. It's only a suggestion. You may be asked, you may be called from the heart of your being to ignore this entire paragraph. You might be asked, it might come to you from the depth of your mind and your awareness to do this exercise more than just twice a day and more than for 5 minutes. And yet you need do nothing. So please watch the mind. Watch the koan, watch the contradiction that can get developed in the Western mind when somebody says, here's a practice you might do. Twice in each of your days, we would ask you to cultivate for 5 minutes the repetition of this thought. What's the thought? I don't need to do this exercise. I don't need to take my next breath. I don't need to stay alive. I don't need to go to work. I don't need to say good morning to my mate. I may choose to do all of those things, some of them or none of them. This is not about doing the exercise because it was assigned. This is about what can awaken in your consciousness when you allow these thoughts in and you cultivate them, you work with them, you bring your awareness to them, you analyze, you observe with childlike innocence, you notice any tendency for judgment or constriction or contraction, and you release it as quickly as you can, moving back to that childlike innocence. This thought, I need do nothing, will come as quite a shock to your consciousness, and your mind will say, but wait a minute, I have all these things I have to do. What about this? What about that? Oh my goodness, is the world going to stop spinning if I stop needing what I need? Dear friends, that would be up to the world and not up to you. The power of these first two axioms will be what everything that follows is built upon. And yet, everything that follows is merely a way of watering those two axioms and making them the anchor of your awareness. For when an anchor is firmly in place, you will literally create whatever you so desire, and you will create it from perfect freedom and perfect deliberateness. You will even transcend miracle-mindedness. For miracle-mindedness is still a stage of perception, which is just sort of mastery. It's just short of mastery. Mastery comes when you know that you are literally and deliberately creating. There is nothing miraculous about it. You will decree a thing and it shall be so. That as the Creator creates. For while the Creator marvels at you, the Creator knows perfectly well that your creation was not a miracle. It was very deliberate. It was born from the pure radiance of the energy we call love, life, the world, God, the Creator. The Creator does not sit on its throne and say, I wonder if I'm worthy to create my children, my offspring. I wonder if I'm worthy to express myself through the divine spark of consciousness that my children are. It does not enter into the holy mind of the Creator. I wonder if it's okay for me to create a solar system. The Creator receives a thought, or you might say a thought emanates within its holy mind. He decrees it, and it is so. And the Creator looks upon all things and says, this is what it is, and this is fine, just the way it is. The last segment is titled Exercise in Conscious Creation. The third and last exercise we would give you in this lesson is this. Choose something that you do every day that you are convinced is so utterly ordinary that it certainly does not hold any power or any spiritual meaning whatsoever. This could be something as simple as having a glass of water, brushing your teeth, or yawning. Choose something that you know you do every day and decide to make this the focus of your worship, the focus of your conscious awareness for that brief period of time, so that when you do it, you stop and you say, ah, I did this and it is done. It is very good. Even if it is something as simple as raising your head from the pillow, become aware of it, own it as self-created, and as you contemplate that action, say this to yourself. It is very good. I have done this. It is good. I have created this experience. Again, those that are truly committed will find that they begin to enjoy this process, and they begin to apply it more and more to other events in their lives. They begin to reawaken the childlike joy of building a castle in the sandbox. For in truth, that is all you are doing here. Consciousness is your sandbox, and you are creating castles. You've simply forgotten to enjoy them. When you want to be rid of them, you lament, oh, but if I give this up and change my mind and move on, what will happen to my creations? What will others think of me if I act like a child and just take my little plastic shovel and knock the castle down and go in and have a sandwich for lunch? What will people think of me? Will I fit in? Will I be accepted? Will I be judged? Will I be persecuted? There is a position in your mind who could say, who cares? Opinions of others mean nothing unless you choose to make them mean something for you. Now we come to what concludes this lesson. So here's the question for you. What blocks you in your own mind? For even as you are hearing this, you may recognize a resistance. That resistance is the energy of fear. Uh-oh, what will happen if I follow this path? That part of your mind, called the ego, will rise up to tell you that if you listen to the one that some have called the savior of the world, it will take you to a path of destruction. That is because the voice for ego knows that it will be destroyed if this path is followed. You, the reality of who you are, cannot be destroyed. That resistance that comes up in you is fear. And fear is one of the energies which is out of alignment with the truth of the kingdom. Therefore, fear not and continue in faith. For I say unto you, what you will discover at the end of this pathway is perfect freedom, perfect power, perfect spaciousness, perfect joy, and perfect peace of living, literally living in the kingdom of heaven. Choice is yours. for those of you that will feel this resistance come up so strongly, and for those of you that will yet call out unto me in your dreams and prayers, help me get through this. I say unto you, you walk not alone. I cannot be further from you than the width of a thought. And yes, you are the creator of that thought. Two embarked upon just such a path. Each axiom that I will share and shall refine, as well as the many exercises in the way of mastery, these are specifically exercises and truths that were given to me from the time I was initiated by certain Essene teachers in the way of the heart. Think about it. When my teacher said to me, it's time for you to go spend 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, don't you think I had a little resistance come up within me? I too had the choice. I had to notice that I was creating the thought of fear. I had to notice that I was separating myself from the great protection of the energy of creation, the awareness of the energy of creation. Some would call it the love of God. I had to physically move my body into the wilderness to move through my own rings of fear and discover what was on the other side. The pathway that I have walked is the same pathway that you are walking. And if our pathway is the same, then we all walk together toward the creation and away from illusion, pain, weakness, unworthiness, guilt, and even death. So engage in your exercises with great zeal, with great joy, and above all, with great outrageous playfulness. Play with this. You cannot be playing with this if you beat yourself up because you're not remembering for 5 minutes in every hour to do an exercise. If you're not remembering 5 minutes in the beginning of the day and 5 minutes in the end of the day to do that exercise and you beat yourself up, that's not playfulness. Learn to look with innocence upon all that arises. Abide lovingly with all of your creations, including the places within your mind where fear has made a home. Eventually, if you put these little exercises to work, much indeed will arise. The upset, the shame, the guilt, the judgment, the pain, the fear will arise. Practice then and practice well and practice with joy and playfulness. Know that you are loved, loving, and lovable forever, and that in truth the only thing that is occurring is that an old dream is being released, that a new dream might replace it, the dream of worthiness, peace, wakefulness, and union with all of creation. Again, I say, I come not alone in this specific work, but I come with many who support your healing and your awakening. Therefore, indeed, be at peace this day, beloved friends. Abide lovingly with your creations. Amen. So there we have it, at the end of a couple weeks, two lessons of the Way of Mastery. Hopefully a clarion call to learn to dance and play and look at your life and all of your creations with innocence and understanding that if you don't like what you have created, you can still look on it lovingly, own it as your own creation, and choose differently in the next moment. And there aren't really any words to describe how at one and the same time, if you know, if you get, if you let this soak into your mind, if you let yourself practice even the first two lessons of the Way of Mastery, you don't need anything else. And yet, in the same moment that that is true, this work just deepens more and more profoundly as you go through the future, the coming lessons. So we've only got about 4 minutes left. Call number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a brief conversation. What's on your mind? How can we support you? How are you finding this experience of going through the lessons as slowly and carefully as we are? Area code 513, you're in the air. Who do we have?
This is Tom. I have been enjoying very much the process and the speed at which you've been going through the Way of Mastery. And it this morning, I don't know, I was just triggered to explore the Christ Mind Way of Mastery website and came upon the Yeshua letters icon and clicked on it and read the first letter. It was amazing. It helped me, you know, it gave me an insight as to, you know, where it all started. So I just wanted to check in, say hi, and thank you for your contributions to this work. And many blessings.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It is there is a book titled The Yeshua Letters, and it's part of that pathway, as is the book The Way of the Servant. And we will probably eventually get to that. I don't know if it'll be in sequence, but it's a great idea that people can tap into reading segments of that book and or The Way of the Servant and or all kinds of other little snippets that Yaim has been putting out there over the years. So I'm glad you're finding it useful. Thank you for the call, letting us know that, and blessings.
Well, if I unmuted myself, you all might could hear me. So that was a pre-recorded show of the Way of Mastery Lesson 2 review from February of this year. And I'm assuming Dr. Tim will be back with us on Monday. I hope everybody had an awesome Thanksgiving yesterday with family and friends. And today is Friday, November the 25th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I believe that Michael is going to continue with some of the emotions, and that's going to create a little series for us to put on special shows. And it's been very enlightening, and we're thankful. I'm not sure if Michael is ready yet to talk. We also have a question that came. I'm not sure if it came out of the book study or off of the app, but I got an email from someone with a question, so I'll present that to him when he's ready for that. And we do have a hand up already. It's a Skype caller, so we'll get to you in just a moment. So thank you for being patient. And let me see if Michael's ready for any of that yet. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain, whyagain.org, and click on the start here. Scroll down, there's a bullseye. Both of those are good places. They'll take you to a page where all the worksheets are, where you can download audios, videos, just lots of information. When you first go to our website, the first thing that pops up, there's 6 big buttons right in the middle of the page, and those are also, you know, good to take you immediately to someone. And I'm sorry, Michael said something to me at the same time. Not take you to someone, but take you immediately to, like, where you can download the book or you can tap into the radio shows. Or I was flipping over at the same time, so I'm sure that I'm saying the right thing. And then there's the wake-up sheet, so the forgiveness worksheets. If you click that, it takes you directly to that page. There's also another big button that will take you to all the other worksheets. And there's the videos that you can purchase that stream, and then also the shop for the DVDs, CDs, and the books. So those big buttons are frequently places where people go, and so that's right in the forefront. And there's just lots of information. Just scroll up in the top right corner. You'll find our Facebook and our Vimeo and YouTube, all of those channels. There's one little button. You push one button, it takes you straight there. So, Michael, if you're ready, we will take the caller first.
Let's go for it.
All right. It's a Skype caller, so all it shows is a bunch of ones to me, but you are on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, calling from Springfield.
Oh, okay. It shows
you're
calling through Skype. We welcome you to the show.
Need somebody
Springfield,
that can
Missouri,
worship.
Springfield, Illinois. Springfield, Ohio.
Springfield. Oh, yeah. Need somebody
well, how
that
can we
can
support
worship.
You? What's on your mind today?
I want you to really worship my cock.
Oh, some people need a life.
Yeah. Yeah, bless his heart.
All right. So there's no other hands up right now, and you want me to read the question that came through?
Let's go for our question then.
All right. So they said, Dear Dr. Rice, I hope I understand you right. So in forgiveness, since the universe consists of one's own self and all the other selves, in forgiving others, we are actually forgiving our greater self. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mute yourself when you're going to cough, please.
Excuse me, I didn't realize I wasn't muted, sweetie. I just inhaled some water. Okay. So let's go back up on that question, and let's first define forgiveness. What I hear in the questioner's question is that they're still defining forgiveness as, I'm going to let myself or somebody else off the hook. Or this off-the-hook idea of forgiveness. You know, you did something terrible, bad, wrong, whatever, and I'm going to let you off the hook for that. Or I'm going to let myself off the hook for that. Now, my offering would be that that idea of letting oneself off the hook is purely and 100% a Greek idea of pardoning in place of forgiveness. So I'm going to suggest that you never forgive anyone. You never forgive yourself. You never even think of forgiving anyone for anything. Pardon someone, if you will. You know, someone does something bizarre and off the wall, like our caller a minute ago. So we'll let that go. Do I need to have some sort of grudge or pain or trauma? No, I can. Well, we'll let that go, and we'll cut that stuff off. And now, if what just happened, that resonates something painful in me, you know, somebody calls into the show and makes a nasty, you know, remark, and their only objective is to make their nasty remark. They know they're not going to get to say on. But if that brings up, let's say it brings up fear in me or anger or whatever, I would have no need whatsoever to apply forgiveness to that person or to myself. But I would apply forgiveness to the response in my mind. I would apply forgiveness to my anger response. And if you think forgiveness, remove, you'll be a big step ahead of the Greek world. So never forgive anyone for anything, but forgive continuously. Every time your mind comes up with something, especially that is less than love, fear, sadness, grief, rage, hatred, vengeance, pain, drama, trauma, loss, then you apply forgiveness to those energetic dynamics that come from within in order to remove them. And the way that is done, you know, when you realize, let's say, you know, something like just happened with our caller, if my mind comes up with anger, And I can remember a time when my mind would have been, had anger come up in that situation with someone making that kind of a call. So I want to remove this response from within me. Now, in the Greek world, they would say, oh, that caller made you angry, therefore you forgive them. And I say, baloney. No. He didn't make me angry at all. But if there's anger in here, if I'm swimming in anger in my mind, I'm swimming in a process that's happening inside of me. It doesn't come from the outside. It's not imposed from the outside. Now, I can hide it from myself, and something from the outside can trigger it in me and show it to me. And now that I've been shown what's inside of me, I apply forgiveness to remove that energetic dynamic from my mind. And the short form of the process is to look at the circumstance of the situation, basically step one in the worksheet. And in the, we've got a short form, and I hadn't thought of it before, Jeannie, but we should probably put the short form of the worksheet, the next edit of the app. We should probably put just a simple three-step in there, too. In any event, if my mind's coming up with anger, I have a construct. I have a complex, and we're going to talk about anger in a few minutes. I have a complex of thought disorders in me consciously used to anesthetize the pain that comes up in me when somebody does something like that. So that's mine. And the way I access the unconscious part of that response, because most people go along through life and say, well, they made me mad. No, I'm not a mad person. They made me mad. It just doesn't have anything to do with me. Excuse me. My physiology just generated anger. That's mine. Now, the way I get to the unconscious part, because I don't believe there's any anger in there, the average person is like, no, not me. They made me that way. You know, they belong to the universal, the one world religion. There's a lot of fear-mongering going on about the satanic one world religion that's trying to take over the world. Excuse me, it's already taken over the world. It's already alive and well in most churches in the world today. It's the religion of blame, denial and blame. Not me, you. You made me angry. You made me sad. You made me afraid. Hence, the whole Greek philosophy is based on that religion. And of course, then forgiveness becomes, well, I'll just let that person off the hook. Once again, I say never forgive anybody for anything. But the way I get to the hidden part of my mind is to look at the situation and identify, what is it that I wanted from that caller? Oh, I wanted them to treat the show respectfully and our audience respectfully. So that's a goal that I hold. And when I recognize that I have a goal, that when I hold it in my mind, it causes my mind to use anger in order to achieve that goal, then I recognize that in my file, in my mind, file so to speak, on being treated respectfully, there's anger. You know, maybe an early childhood, maybe genetic memories. These things go back generations and generations. And so when I look at that goal is what drives my mind to use data based in anger to produce my perceptual construct. You remember the Harvard research we've talked about so often, where they documented that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells were firing, a maximum of 9 bits of data could come into conscious awareness. We call that metaphorically the 9-bit mind. So if I recognize that there are 10,000 units of memory firing off in me, literally electrical energetic patterns firing off in me, they're measurable, but I only get to see the result of 9, that means there are 9,991 bits of data that are unconscious, that are hidden from me. And the way that we acquire the unnatural condition of an unconscious mind is by living in denial. And denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. So if I were to say that caller made me mad, what I'm saying is I'm in denial of my anger, and I'm going to use that anger to build my brain's image of that caller. And by so doing, I relegate the cause of my anger to my own unconscious. Now, understanding then that something has to take that 10,000 bits of data and determine which 9 bits of data are going to perception in the moment. So the thing that does that is our goal. If you go back to the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shabag or shabak, and it literally translates to cancel. So what is it that I cancel? In any given circumstance where my mind and my physiology, my nervous system, my body is producing some form of pain or upset, it's doing that because there's that form of pain or upset in me. If I don't believe it belongs to me, I hide it from myself, but I'm the one who's swimming in it. Obviously, it's mine. The driver that causes my mind to use that particular data in that circumstance is my goal. Now, of course, it's very reasonable for that me to want that person to treat me respectfully. I mean, gee, that's a reasonable goal. Why would I cancel that? What's wrong with that goal, people would say? There's nothing wrong with that goal. That's a perfectly wonderful goal. The problem is when you load it into mind that in the file I'm being treated respectfully, there's anger or fear or sadness or grief or rage or pain or drama or trauma, then by loading that goal, it causes the mind to use that unconscious data to produce our perception of others. And then when we produce our perception of others out of our own dissociated anger, we can really believe that it must be theirs because, after all, we can see it. It is truly theirs. The way that I undo that dilemma is I forgive, I cancel, shebeg, the goal for him to treat us respectfully. When I cancel that goal, the driver that causes my mind to use my unconscious pain to produce my perception, removed, when that driver is removed, that pained perception collapses in on itself. When it collapses in on itself, I have access to the original pain. And when I bring that forward in the presence of love, that pain is processed out. It's dissolved. It's forgiven. It's removed. So when we're talking about forgiveness, we're talking about removing content, or maybe more properly, transmuting content within that does not belong within, and therefore freeing oneself of it. So if I do my work around that, and a circumstance shows up where somebody's being disrespectful, I can look at them and go, what's happening for you that you're so, in such a disrespectful space? There must be something really painful going on inside of you. What are you trying to anesthetize yourself against? Rather than my pain response, my why is this happening to me again experience. So that's my input on what we're talking about with forgiveness. Again, nothing to do with letting anybody else or yourself off the hook. It's about accessing and removing pained unconscious content from one's own mind. You have any thoughts to add to that, Jeannie, in response to that gentleman's question or that lady's question?
I believe it is a gentleman. No, that addressed it pretty well. So it's just a matter of understanding what the forgiveness is. And when rereading his question again, since the universe consists of one's own self and all the other selves, maybe address that, you know, yes, we are connected, but we are also individualized. And so the other selves may do something that is off target, or you may do something off target. But the forgiveness part is actually looking at the goal that you're holding for either the other person or yourself.
Right. In the same way that, you know, we know that what we call a body is made up of trillions of cells. Each of those cells is an individual, but they're not separate from that so-called body. In the same way, we are individual cells, and in the ancient teachings, they call it the mystical body of Christ. We are individual cells in this one life. And nobody needs forgiveness ever for anything. But those with pain and trauma inside of them need to be applying forgiveness to themselves to remove their pain and trauma. And what tends to happen is, because of the law of resonance, because resonance causes people to move toward each other, is that people will tend to interact, will tend to resonate themselves into each other's space, where usually both people will get an opportunity to learn forgiveness simultaneously. Each one will have a response that's less than love. That's a reflection of content in the mind that is based in some form of hostility or fear. And so each gets the opportunity to learn forgiveness, to remove those dynamics from their own minds. So it's a summation of the forgiveness process. And, of course, you know, you can do the worksheet process on our website live. You can go to the website and you can actually fill in the worksheet there. And when you complete it, you can print it off. You can download any one of several different worksheets that are on the website. You download those free, and, you know, print them off on your printer or take them to the printer and get them, you know, printed out so you can do them in writing. Or you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And when you type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, you will be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can download that. It's a totally and completely private app, and you can do the worksheet right there on the app. And so we invite you to take advantage of that. Go for it. And if you're out there in listener land and you have a thought or a comment or a question, if you dial the number 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to talk to us. So give us a call. Once you're on the line, push 1. That'll raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to talk to us. So 563-999-3581. So, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet.
Okay.
And, you know, we were talking about continuing the conversation on emotions, and I can't help but think of all of the little emotion spots that Aria's got in her room and how she's learning to identify the different. Yeah, it started out being, if any of you have ever seen the little cartoon movie Inside Out, which is phenomenal, and it talks about all the different emotions that are in the mind, you know, whether, you know, it starts off everybody's just joy, and then along the way comes sadness, and then fear, and then disgust and anger, and so all these little emotions take over the thoughts in the mind. Well, she's got those, but then we also got her, they're just little round, they're probably 3-inch round little balls, basically, and they have eyeballs on them, smiles or frowns or whatever, or a tear, and they're the different emotions. And she's actually drawn pictures of each one, and they're taped all over her room. And her favorite is scribbles.
Scribbles.
And it's like, it looks like a rainbow. It's got all the colors all mixed up. And scribbles is kind of like confusion, sort of. But it's because all of the emotions are going at once, and he doesn't really know which emotion. And so in her book that goes along with them, scribbles is the narrator of the book, and he describes and explains all of the emotions. And so she really likes that. And sometimes she'll put them together, and she'll put like maybe the love emotion next to the sadness emotion, because she says love will help it to get better. Or she'll put the, you know, courage next to fear or something like that. So she's learned she can put a good one next to a off-target one, and that it will help it to heal. So that's pretty cool.
It is. And scribbles It's interesting, this little character, and the woman's done a really nice job of creating these books, but Scribbles is has become confused. He's trying to figure out his feelings, his emotions, pardon me, and finally becomes an emotion detective in order to understand each of these emotions. So he is her favorite. Cool. All right, well, let's take a look at our emotion for today. And we're going to deal with anger. We're going to take a look at definition of anger in harmony with this work and look at it on a deeper level. You know, the culture tends to think of anger as an emotion, but actually the anger is not an emotion. Anger is an anesthetic, and it keys into a whole complex of thought disorders that result in what we call emotional expression. So my offering would be that anger is a thought disorder that viscerally results in the production of chemistry. It produces an anesthetic effect on internally generated pain. So as opposed to being an emotion, the anger is actually it's a way that the structure produces an anesthetic to deaden pain. You know, I'd like to offer a good film to watch in this regard. It's called Thank You for Sharing. It's a little bit risque. It's one of the, or no, I shouldn't say risque. What's the word? Anyway, on the edge. It's actually a film about recovery from different forms of addiction, in particular sexual addiction. So there's some kind of conversations that many people might find embarrassing around sex. But in any event, there are several people in the film that are in recovery, different 12-step programs, and people who should be in a 12-step program but aren't, and you know, the interaction between all of these people. But there's sexual addiction, there's anger addiction, there's drug addiction, there's alcohol addiction, and people in various phases of recovery. And one by one, the film goes through showing basically each person falling off the wagon. And of course, we all know alcohol is, you know, what's the most famous song about alcohol? Feeling no pain. It's an anesthetic. If you actually take two molecules of alcohol and take the water out, you've got ether. You can saw bones on that stuff. It's purely anesthetic. That's what anger is as well. But one of the things that I like to point people to this film for is if you watch it, Thank You for Sharing is the name of the film, you will see several people moving in the direction of falling off the wagon, you know, of going back to their addiction. And it does a beautiful job of showing how the first drug that virtually every person in the film uses before they lose their sobriety is hostility. And I don't know whether they did that purposely or that's just been their experience in the writing about it, but basically most people try the hostility drug first to anesthetize themselves. And then if that doesn't work, they turn to something stronger. So anger is a thought disorder that viscerally results in the production of chemistry that produces an anesthetic effect on internally generated pain. It tends to lock one into sympathetic dominance, which reduces intelligence and thinking ability. The reason that happens, and you'll notice there are people who, you know, I would never do that. I only said that because I was angry. Well, what happened? Anger makes people stupid. Actually, there's a great quote from Albert Einstein. He says, anger is only found in the bosom of fools. When one goes into sympathetic dominance, basically what happens is blood flow is increased to the lungs and to the large muscles with which we would run or fight. Basically, sympathetic dominance is fight, flight, freeze, fear. And what happens in that state, and it's a wonderful thing, because what happens is the blood flow is cut off, literally through capillary action. Blood flow is cut off to things like reproduction, things like elimination, things like, you know, regeneration. Higher cortical functions, higher brain functions are cut off. That's why people are stupid when they get angry. They come back and go, oh, I'm so sorry I did that. I just lost my temper. Implying that I did something really stupid because I was in anger. Literally, blood flow is cut off to the higher centers of the brain in sympathetic dominance. And it's also cut off to all of these other functions. And someone who lives in that sympathetic dominant state over an extended period of time, like years or a whole lifetime, it's a tragedy on their physiology. Because where they're always ready on an instant's notice to go fight and scrap with somebody, brains don't work very well. Their physiology starts to suffer a variety of diseases until that circulation is restored to those functions that we call parasympathetic. So the parasympathetic system is generally expressed as rest, digest, and regenerate. In sympathetic dominance, rest, digest, and regenerate are cut off from their blood flow in order to supply the large muscles and the lungs. And so the lungs can take in more air, more oxygen, and, you know, the legs and the arms can fight. But that's at a cost. Which, you know, if a lion's chasing you in the jungle, that cost is fine. It's no big deal. 10 minutes later, you're free of the lion and it's done. But if you go into the office and your boss functions like the lion and you're not sure whether they're coming in the room in 2 minutes or 10 minutes or 2 hours or tomorrow, then sympathetic dominance becomes a state where higher cortical function blood flow is cut off and rest, digest, regenerate, repair doesn't have blood flow. Of course, that adds to the anesthetic effect of anger. So anger is always based in the belief in some form of weakness or threat. It's triggered into activity by the perceived failure of self or another or others to meet a goal related to power and or security. Goals that involve some form of unresolved fear, pain, loss, threat, self-worth, or failure. Anger is always used to anesthetize against the pain of those things. Now, externally, so that's the internal impact of anger. Moves people into sympathetic dominance. Actually, the fear moves them into sympathetic dominance. Anger is just a response to cover up the pain of that. Now, externally, anger appears as a strong emotional response that comes from within. And that emotional response is the result of a hidden complex of related thought disorders that appear as things like displeasure, antagonism, irritation, exasperation, or wrath. So on an emotional level, again, anger is an anesthetic. These related thought complexes produce all of these emotional responses. And when anger increases in its intensity, when it becomes uncontrollable, it's called rage. And rage is a reflection of an underlying, you know, think about anybody you've ever watched in rage. There's an underlying insecurity, and that insecurity is so profound that it prompts one to engage in violence. And they engage in violence, whether it's physical, mental, verbal, emotional, in order to dominate control, and survive. So if one is ever going to, you know, in order to, as we talked about in yesterday's show, in order to bring about a behavior that you want to have, you've got to have a thought complex. You know, if you think about a newborn child and, you know, that you want your emotional, physical, mental response to be that of caring, supporting, nurturing, and taking positive action, even in the face of negativity. And you said that to a newborn, the newborn would go, what the heck are you talking about? I don't have a clue what anything you just said means. They have no brain cells for it. In order to behave in a certain way, there has to be a complex of mind energy, a complex of thoughts, a grouping of thoughts that supports that behavior. Now, you'll notice that by the time you were 2 or 3 or 4, or when your first memories start happening, you had a whole complex of responses to life. The reason for that was because genetically you received these thought complexes from your parents. Environmentally, certain thought complexes were reinforced. And environmentally, you watched certain thought complexes being played out. And you remember the power person dynamic that we've talked about. When a power person dynamic happens, three things have occurred. The power person is not functioning as love. The power person has more power over the child's life than the child does. And the child perceives it as survival. And in that circumstance, where a power person dynamic is being instilled in someone's mind, it's a whole complex of energies. The energy field of the child opens wide like a sponge. They're just, you know, wide open and just draw in every energetic pattern from the environment. And these become the complex energy patterns from which we respond and behave. You remember yesterday we talked about that fourth beatitude, a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession. You who desire the mind structure that underlies just and fair behavior, the behavior and decisions that produce just and fair behavior between people. You've got to have a thought complex. You've got to have a collection of mind energy patterns that produce that behavior. And this whole anger rage complex is one that comes from having been hurt. And when certain circumstances occur in someone's life and those old hurt thought complexes start activating, start resonating, I mean, you can just watch somebody go from, you know, gentle, caring, sweet, nurturing, and move into, you know, it's the classic Jekyll and Hyde. You watch, and all of a sudden, this person is almost not recognizable. We hear this from a lot of people in dealing with people in marriages. It's like, you know, I married this person, and I thought they were this. And all of a sudden, you know, well, yeah, we did have a lot of stress going on in our lives, and all of a sudden, they weren't the person I married at all. What happened to them? A different set of thought complexes were resonated by stress. Notice that when somebody makes a persona change, a personality change like that, they make that personality change under stress. And stress comes from holding goals. When one becomes overloaded with stress, then they move from behavior to behavior to behavior in relationship to what they learned in relation in interaction with their power person, usually a parent. So there are three behaviors possible for the person who's in this stressful situation or prior to, you know, somebody meets somebody and goes, oh, look, Mr. or Ms. Wonderful. And they are. And when the stress starts to build, they move out of, you know, the first level of stress. When stress is at a manageable, reasonable level, people will default in their minds to behaving in the way they've behaved in relationship to their power person. When all was well, to get along with their power person. But when stress starts to build, literally the thought complexes that become activated that are resonated by that will notch it up a level, and the automatic decision system kicks in, and a person now moves into behaviors that they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, and this is where you'll see the rage come up, and you'll notice that people don't get move from, you know, Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy to rage when everything's going well and they're achieving what they want to achieve, they're getting everything they want in their lives. They don't move into that ultra-stress posture until they have generated enough goals that they're now ultra-stressed.
Michael, you just sounded like you moved away there all of a sudden. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
My headset just disconnected, so that's why it sounded like I'd moved off into space. So I should be back now, am I?
Yes, you are.
Cool. Okay. So anger, hostility, rage are states of mind that produce anesthetics against pain, tend to produce unconsciousness. People lose control of their own behavior mechanism, much like the person who gets drunk. And the next morning wakes up and realizes or is told what they've done. And they go, oh, my goodness, that's so terrible. I'll never do that again. And they say it with the deepest of deep sincerity. They really mean it. They're never going to do that again. But they don't have any control over the internal prompts of their own behavior mechanism. And so if they don't do the work of going in and forgiving the thought complexes behind, let's say, something like rage and control and violence that goes along with it, if they don't clean that up, the next time the circumstance is the same, that exact same behavior is going to happen again, literally against their own will and choice. So that's our next emotion, or anesthetic, whichever you want to call it. And I'm assuming perhaps that will resonate or open some thoughts or some questions. And so if you're out there in listener land, let's talk about it. What's on your mind? Have you ever found yourself seduced into rage, into anger, and losing control over your own behavior? The way that you recover from that, recovery in that case looks like two things. You go in and you forgive the thought disorders that are behind the violence. You literally forgive the thought disorders that produce displeasure, antagonism, irritation, exasperation, wrath. Each of those is a reflection of a different thought or complex of thoughts in the mind. And at the same time as you're doing that, you consciously, purposely work to build a thought complex into your mind about how you choose to behave. I'm going to function, you know, lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, if my power person didn't treat me lovingly, gently, and with respect, under stress, it's going to be quite a challenge for me to treat others lovingly, gently, and with respect. So the work of forgiveness allows the removing of the energetic patterns, the thought complexes that drive us into those old power person dynamics, and then engaging in and cultivating one's relationship with oneself as love, and cultivating the knowledge that the people with whom they're interacting are, in fact, active present love. Then you get the shift of mind from one end of the spectrum to the other. One finds as they forgive the thoughts that produce this anger, rage complex, that physiologically they get to soften and relax. They get to go into a state of serenity. And from that state of serenity, behavior flows from being. And behavior flows from being rather than from carbon-based memory and the past in the mind, life just becomes a whole different game. So that's what we're here to accomplish. That's what we're here to support. And if you're out there in listener land and have a thought for us, an experience, push one. Let's have a conversation about it. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What topic would you like to address, and or what aspect of the topics we've been talking about the last few days are triggering for you, or leave you in a space of, I need more information in that regard? That's what we're here to offer. So calling number, if you're on one of those stations, again, where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. You call that number, you're listening to the show, push one. Let's talk about it. What's on your mind? How can we support you? And for those who would like to join us for the Hear My Voice book club at 3:30 Eastern Time, you can go to the notes. There'll be a link there. I'm sure Jeannie will put one in. And or you can go to events on our website. And at 3:30. There's a Zoom call you can tap into through that link and be part of the Hear My Voice, Why Is This Happening to Me Again book study club. So we'll be starting that at 3:30 Eastern Time. So if you're out there in this or land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
No, it is all quiet.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, if nobody has any questions, I've actually still got some prep to do for the book study club. So I'd rather continue with the conversation. If anybody's got a thought for us, push one and let's talk about it. Otherwise, I think we'll close the show out for today and say thank you for joining us. And again, we hope your Thanksgiving was wonderful and, moving into this whole holy day season. I hope it's an awesome time for healing. It's oftentimes a tough time when the holidays come around and we're sometimes confronted with people that otherwise we maybe tend to avoid. And so as you do your work, you find that those situations become easier and easier, and you get to spend more and more time in serenity. So thank you for joining us. Create the best you get of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.